And like Shiri's talk, I'm going to discuss some probabilistic applications of the basic formula for entropy or for Fisher information that Keith discussed. And the subject of that could be thought of as somehow a thermodynamical perspective of the central limit theorem, which I hope you'll find as illuminating as I found it. Let me just remind things that you may be used to already. So unless I say otherwise, X is a real valued random variable. It has density F, expectation 0 and variance 1. The entropy of X is what we're used to, and the Fisher information of X is, as in Shiri's talk, G is a standard Gaussian, and as always, we always start with the fact that the Gaussian has a maximal entropy. Now, as Keith mentioned, it's not only that this is the maximal random variable with maximal entropy. There's also a stability result, which is the Pinsker-Cheesar-Kullback inequality, which says that if we are close to the maximal value, then the random variable is really close in total variation distance to the Gaussian. So there's a stability result, and so this number entropy really measures how close we are to a Gaussian. Now, so we know this already for 1 to n, but I'm just writing the 1 to 2 case. So I took two IID copies of X, and we know that the entropy increases, but when you read the proof, we'll see it again. It's not only that it increases, we know that unless X is itself a Gaussian, then this inequality is strict. So we have some hope that we can, because repeated convolution increases entropy, and as long as we're far away from a Gaussian, entropy increases, we can hope to understand the central limit theorem in terms of entropy. Now, as Keith mentioned, this was done by several authors, but I want to concentrate on quantitative versions of this fact. So I'm recalling a theorem that was already quoted, and this is the theorem of Karlin and Sofer. So it says the following. So given some function k, which is decreasing and tends to zero at infinity, and given a number epsilon, there exists a number delta with the following property. So we look at the family of all random variables x, again, as before, their mean 0, variance 1, which satisfies such a tail condition, tail estimate, and assume that the entropy of X is less than the entropy of a Gaussian by at least epsilon, then the entropy of X plus Y over square root of 2 is more than the entropy of X plus delta. Now, I think anybody here, it's a moment thought, says that in here you can see the central limit theorem. This means that repeated iterations of this process must tend to the maximum. And there is also a quantitative estimate. And the basic problem that I want to address here is to find a quantitative estimate of delta in terms of this function, this decay profile of the epsilon. Now, we're not going to do that. We're going to, as it is stated, this problem is not solved. We do not know really a dependence of delta on k and epsilon. We're going to add some much stronger assumptions in such decay of second moments, in which case we will be able to get an estimate, but as it is, this basic problem, really finding concrete estimates of delta in terms of k and epsilon is open. Let me just say that the Karlin-Sofer paper uses a compactness argument in a crucial way so that you cannot read such a dependence from the paper. Okay, so condition that will replace this decay condition is what we call what is a Poincaré inequality or a spectral gap inequality. I'm going to discuss this more a little bit later, but let me just write the definition. So a random variable satisfies a spectral gap inequality with constant C, and I will always, it's also called a Poincaré inequality with constant C. If for any smooth function S on the real line, we have that the variance of S is bounded by the L2 moment of its derivative with respect to the density F, and C is on the right-hand side. So the theorem that I want to state is the following. This is just if we want to look at the statement analogous to Carlin and so forth. So we have a random variable with variance 1, finite entropy, and assume that it satisfies a spectral gap inequality with constant C. Then we have that the entropy increases by at least some constant, which depends on the spectral gap, times the original distance from the Gaussian, which is the same as saying is delta is linear in epsilon, in that statement. So this is an answer. We actually have a 1 to n version of this. So we actually have the following. So if now we take n IID copies of x, x is again as in before, then for every direction, I look at how close some AIXI is to the Gaussian in terms of entropy, and it's bounded by the original distance to a Gaussian, and here I have some function of the direction. So this function alpha of A is written here. Now, the fact that we have 1 minus AI in the denominator is, of course, to be expected, because if one of the AIs is 1, then we cannot expect any increase. Here again, C is the Poincaré constant of X. I said X is over there. It's with the spectral gap estimate. Now, if you plug in the direction that's perhaps the most interesting, which is the main diagonal, we get that the entropy of G minus the entropy of the central limit average is bound, it decays like 1 over N. Okay, times the original distance from the Gaussian. So, so let me say some remarks on theorem 2. So, first of all, the 1 over N decay rate is optimal, and Keith discussed that. This is just an example of the exponential random variable. If I plug this estimate in theorem 2 into the stability result for the maximality of the Gaussian, what we actually get is that the total variation distance between a central limit average and the Gaussian is bounded as follows. And what you see here is that we really get, so up to these constants, which depend on the distribution, we get a 1 over square root of n decay, which is very Barryessian. So there are two differences. First of all, we assume something much stronger than 2 plus epsilon moment. We assume a Poincaré inequality. But we get some sort of estimate in total variation distance, which is a stronger metric. But this is just a formal consequence of the entropy distance. One final simple thing. Maybe I'll leave the main theorem up here. Okay, so this number alpha of A can be controlled by, essentially, it's bounded by the L infinity norm of this direction squared. So I'm just stating something which is obvious, but we get also some sort of Lindbergh Feller type conditions. So I have some triangular array of random variables such that in each row they are IID, and I'm asking myself when does the sum Aij Xij tend to a Gaussian, let's say in the entropy sense, the stronger metric. And the condition is exactly what we get. So assuming these, let's say the distances to the Gaussian are bounded, we get exactly what you get from the Lindbergh-Feller theorem. We get exactly what we get from the Lindbergh-Feller theorem, which is just that we want the L infinity norms of these directions to tend to infinity, to tend to zero. Okay, so, and this is just because this number alpha there tends to zero when the L infinity norm tends to zero. Okay, so this is a weaker version of the really general Lindbergh-Feller theorem, but and it's just an immediate consequence. Okay. Okay, so I want to say some things about this condition of a spectral gap. So I'm always saying this is a stronger condition than these moment conditions that I described before. So actually, okay. So first of all, Keith stated a result which is he stated the theorem for log concave densities, and so I just want to mention that log concave densities and the real line with variance one satisfy the Poincaré inequality, and the constant doesn't depend on the density. And in fact, there in Rn we have something, this result of Babkov, which says that, so if I have a log concave probability measure on Rn, then mu satisfies the Poincaré inequality, which, and the constant is C divided by the expectation of the L2 norm squared. So in one dimension, this is variance one, and for instance, for convex bodies, you would get here something like NLK squared if it's in isotropic position. C is an absolute constant. Okay? So the statement that Keith mentioned yesterday for log concave is just a formal consequence of the spectral gap estimate. Now, on the real line, this spectral gap condition is well understood. There is actually a formula for the Poincaré constant. So I don't really need it, but I just want to mention it. So I have some. So if I have some probability measure on R with density rho, which, let's say, never vanishes. And let x0 be a median of this density. Then I look at two numbers. I look at the supremum of the product of two such integrals. So it's the integral of from x0 to t of 1 over rho times the same thing with rho. And minus is the same thing on the left-hand side of the median. Okay, so these are two constants. And the theorem of Mukinuk says that so up to universal constants which are independent of the measure, the Poincaré constant of this measure for real valued measures is just the maximum of these two numbers. Up to universal constants. So it's not such a mysterious condition. Well, it still requires some calculation, but you can really handle these parameters in concrete situations. And so finally, I've been hinting all the time that Poincaré is much stronger than all the moment conditions I mentioned before, and in fact, Poincaré implies exponential concentration around the mean. This is a theorem of Gromov and Milman. In particular, it implies exponential decay of the tails, and we have all the moments. So measures that satisfy Poincaré have all their moments are finite, and this is a much stronger condition than what I described before, let's say in the Carl and Sofer theorem. Okay. So this essentially ends the introduction, and I want to get into the proof. So as usual, we begin because I didn't write it. It means you look at the mapping which sends a function f, not f, f is, let's say, g to f, g prime, prime, I think minus. So constant functions send go to zero under this mapping. So so the smallest eigenvalue. So zero is an eigenvalue, and you want to say that the next eigenvalue, I don't remember if I need a minus here or not, with a minus, right? So you want the next one to be at least C.
If not call yeah. this one correct, but call Fisher, then it is studying all elementary course. Just condition for first eigenvalue is supremum, then you take orthogonal to, yeah. to zero eigenvalue, which is constant here.
Exactly.
And so I when you said point correct, you miss, you started to think about something, but it is current.
Okay, well, there are... Well, I think there are some people in this audience... Yeah. I think that people in this audience are more responsible to this terminology than I am, and I'm just continuing. I mean, okay?
It just reflects the level of culture of probabilists, and that time was okay. The first time saw this from some concrete. It is only what it's reflecting.
Okay, so call it however you want to call it. Okay, so I want to describe the proof of theorem one, and so we begin with the usual fact that along the Oranchen Uhlenbeck semigroup, so we have that the entropy of G minus entropy of X is the integral of the information of the evolute of X under the semigroup. So, as usual, this is a linear inequality, and we want to show that. So, we want to show that for any random variable with finite entropy, variance one, which satisfies the Poincaré inequality with constant C, the information decreases. So I wrote it exactly as it is, but this is one the Gaussian has minimal entropy, minimal Fisher information. So this number one minus the information of X is a negative number here. Now, just when saying that this is enough, I'm implying something, and the implied thing here is that this we have a condition in this theorem, which is that we have a Poincaré inequality, so you have to check, this is not a big surprise, that the Poincaré constant doesn't deteriorate along the semigroup. So the Poincaré constant of this random variable is not more than the Poincaré constant of the original random variable. So you can, so if you prove this for such a random variable, you can just integrate the inequality. But this needs to be checked. And this is what we'll do. So I'm going to recall the variational inequality. It's actually an equality, but I'm going to write it as an inequality for the Fisher information of a marginal in the form that Keith presented it yesterday. This is equivalent to the form that she represented today. So I have some density on R2, and I look at the marginal, the X marginal of this density. Then for any regular enough function p, we have such an estimate that the information of this marginal is less than, so we have some integral of some derivative squared plus the integral, again, with respect to our density, you look at the Hessian of log of the density, and you multiply it by, on both sides, by the same vector. So as Keith explained, this is connected to... This is to be expected from the transportation proof of the Brun-Minkowski inequality. This is a thing which is point-wise exactly when... which is positive exactly when W is log-concave. So, because I wrote it in a I took the marginal with respect to the x-axis, I'm going to, in order to get the information of x plus y divided by square root of 2, I'm going to start out with the following density. And then so, with this definition, H is exactly the X marginal of the density over there. And by the variational inequality for every function P, we have... I just rewrote it. And I want to change... So, there is just a simple... We rotate back to the usual coordinates. I denote by this function PUV, I denote it by QXY. So, this is just a rotation back to the usual coordinates. And then the formula that we get is, it doesn't look too pleasant, but you will see in a second that how to handle it. So plugging this change of variable into this inequality, we get the following, that the information of x plus y over square root of 2 is less than some integral. So now we're using the product. We have this f of x times f of y. This will be, again, used just like in Shiri's talk. This will be crucial here. And the Hessian is just a diagonal matrix. It's minus log of the original one-dimensional density, double dash, at x and y on the diagonal. And the rotation turns this into 1 plus q, 1 minus q, and this is the formula. Okay, so this is still... it's some inequality, it's rather complicated. And now we make a simplification, which... The fact that it works is it's an educated guess, but it's somehow mysterious. So we're going to do the most... So q... A priori, q could have been just any function of x and y. We're just going to take it as a function of x. Okay? This is a very, very, very strong simplification. But why do I call this an educated guess? In practically the only example which we can calculate, which isn't a Gaussian, which is the gamma semigroup, we can solve. Keith gave yesterday a formula for the optimal q here. Now, the optimal q does not depend only on x. But it is easily seen that up to constants, it's enough to take, in that specific case, a function which depends only on x. And this is the only motivation I can give for this. Well, the other motivation is that I want a simple inequality. But in a particular case, this is good enough, up to constants.
What is q?
Q is just any function from R2 to R2. But I'm going to specify, I can plug in here any q I want. Okay, so I'm going to plug in a q which depends only on the first coordinate. Okay?
Because the factor is so how two variables achieve their inference among the one variable.
Yes, so it's the same kind of a good fortune, I would guess. Yes. Okay, so... So in what follows, I will always have j is just going to be the information of the original random variable x, phi is going to be minus log of the density, and if you plug q, just depends on r, into this formula, you get the following inequality, which has many terms, but it's not so bad. You will see in a second. So the information of x plus y divided by square root of 2 is less than the information of x plus some quadratic terms. Some integral of f r prime squared and all kinds of terms like that. And so... So this is just plugging this into the formula. So let me just summarize. We have the following thing. So, this is just rewriting essentially what's over there. So for every regular enough function r from r to r, the information change, so we're interested in the information of x plus y over square root of 2 minus the information of x, is less than some t of r, where t of r is some quadratic function of our r. So it's 1/2 the integral of f r prime squared plus these terms. So we have some quadratic terms and some linear terms. And our goal is to choose a function r such that tr is as negative as possible. We want to show that this the information really decreased by a lot. Okay, and so we really use the fact in this infimum formula for the information, we really use the fact that we can use any function, and we restricted ourselves in even to a smaller family of functions. And now we're going to try to minimize this quadratic functional t. So this is the goal. Okay. So the analysis of this quadratic function is based on the following technical result, which I'm going to sketch the proof of. So we're interested in we want to make this t minimal. So I'm saying the following thing. If the infimum of t is the same as minus j times the infimum over, again, functions s of some other functional q, where q is this functional. Okay, so this is just a claim. I'm going to prove it. But so what happens because of this minus sign here, our goal now is to show that for every s, q of s is big. J is the information of x, always the information of the original random variable. Okay, so this is the proposition, and let's... Okay, I want to say just one thing, that this is a simple calculation, that the infimum of q is the infimum of q over all functions s is attained for s with expectation 0. And the reason is this is a simple calculation. We can just go through it. So if I add a constant, this is c. So if I add a constant c to our function s, then I have the quadratic terms. I can group them together. Again, it's q, and here when I add c into the integral here, I will have a term j over 2 times c squared plus the cross term. And when you calculate it, so you get two terms which disappear. One of them is, here we use the fact that the expectation is 0. So this is the term integral of f x. This is with a minus sign, the expectation is 0. And the term integral of f phi dash over j, remember that phi was minus log f, so phi dash is minus f prime over f. The f cancels, and we have the integral of a derivative. And under regularity conditions, think of, let's say, a compactly supported function, the integral of a derivative on r is going to be 0. So these two terms vanish, and we get... And we get that, so if we translate s, a function s by c, we get that, so q of s plus c is q of s plus some quadratic term in c, and this is minimal precisely when c is minus the expectation, so we can always assume that s is expectation 0. The reason I insisted on this is, so I want to prove the theorem assuming the proposition, and this is how you'll see exactly where... the Poincaré inequality comes in. So our goal is to show, because of this minus sign over there, our goal is to show that for any function s with expectation 0, this functional q is big. Okay? So this is exactly where the Poincaré inequality comes in. So I'm just copying. This is the functional q. And the integral of fs prime squared is more than c the integral of fs squared. I don't need to write variance because the expectation is 0. The second term, I just copied it. And so if we use this trivial numerical inequality, what we get So let's just check that this is okay. If I use this inequality, I will get the difference of the terms inside the parentheses over here. So S will cancel. Then this is our goal. We want to find a lower bound independent of S. S cancels. The constants are C and J. So this is exactly what I wrote there, CJ over C plus J. And now we have such an integral which is independent of S, and all we need to do is to estimate it from below. So let's just open it up and see what we have. We see how all the conditions that we had in the random variable come in. So the first term is, for the first term is the integral of fx squared. This is just the variance one condition. So we know that this is 1. The second term is fx phi dash, and this I calculated over here. So phi was minus log of f, so f phi dash is minus f prime over f. So this is just f cancels again. It's minus the integral of xf, and integration by parts just kills the x, and the integral of f is 1. The last term is f phi dash squared over j squared. And again, you just plug this in, and this is just a definition of the information. Okay, so what we have here is 1 minus 2 over j plus 1 over j. So putting all this together, we have that this term is equals cj c plus j times j minus 1 over j. And in conclusion, so we estimated the Fisher information change in terms of an infimum of functional t. We proved that this infimum equals minus j, some infimum of a different functional. This different functional is more than this number for every s. And I can put here instead of j is always more than 1 because the Gaussian is minimal information, so this term j over c plus j, I can estimate it by 1 over c plus 1, and this is exactly the statement of the theorem. Okay, so this is how Poincaré comes in, and everything hinges upon this identity, which is written here. So the infimum of one functional is supposed to be some minus the infimum of another functional. And this is the thing which I want to sketch out to prove. Okay. Maybe I will put the proposition back up. This is this. So this is the proposition which I want to explain. So our functional t was this functional. And okay, so we want to say something about the infimum of t, so let's take an R which minimizes t. And we know what it satisfies. Again, I'm ignoring the existence of these existence results for such things, but it's possible to deal with this. And so it satisfies the Euler-Lagrange equation of this quadratic minimization problem, which is this equation. This is just standard calculus of variations. So we know what the minimizer of t satisfies, this equation star. Okay, so now let's do some standard tricks for such equation. This is a Sturm-Liouville equation. I think I can... I will not refer... Whenever I refer to star, it will be always on the other side, so I hope I planned it okay. Okay, so let's integrate this equation. What do we get? Okay, so the first, I'm just integrating this equation. I have an integral of the derivative. Yeah.
What is unknown in this equation? F is density. What you're looking for?
Nothing is unknown. I'm taking R to be the minimizer, and I know that it has to satisfy...
R. What you're looking for?
Yeah.
R.
R, yeah. Yeah, the infimum of...
is given also. Because.
Everything...
Phi
is minus log of f.
Phi is minus log of f.
Okay. So. Okay, this is always. and J is the information of X.
This I remember, I didn't ask.
Okay. Okay, so I'm integrating this inequality. So here I have an integral of a derivative. This is zero. The integral of this I just copied over there. The integral of JF is J. And the integral of F phi double dash, this is exactly J. You just write down what is the second derivative of the log, plug it in, and you get it. Integration by actually do integration by parts. So we know that the integral of JFR plus the integral of F phi double dash R equals zero. Okay, this is not a big surprise. We have a differential equation. You integrate it. And we do when you think about it, these are really the natural things to do. So I multiply this equation star by R, and then I integrate. And let's see what we get. So the first term is the integral of F R prime prime with a minus sign. Now I can do integration by parts and put the prime on the R, and then I get exactly the kind of term I'm looking for in T. Integral F R prime squared. The rest of the terms are just copied, I think. Am I right? JFRs. Yes, the rest of the terms are just copied. I don't do anything. I multiply by R and integrate. Okay? So we get two blue identities over here. And if we sum them up, we get this. That T, which is R is the minimizer of T, and this minimal value for this minimizer equals this linear term. This is not a surprise. For the minimization of quadratic problems, you usually get, even in the real line, that the minimum is this linear term. But this is how you do it. Okay, so our goal is, remember, our goal was to show that this T equals some minus some other infimum of this functional Q. So we're going to estimate this thing. So let's return to star. And I just open it up over here. So it's F R double dash minus F prime R prime. I just open this derivative. And again, because phi is minus log of F, we have this identity. So if I write for F prime, I write it as minus F phi prime, I get F in all the terms, and I can just divide by F. And I get equation double star, and now only double star will appear in the next slide. I hope. Okay, so this is just dividing by F. Okay, so far I'm just playing around this equation. And now comes the connection between Q, and we had the functional Q and the functional T. Now comes the connection. We're in the real line. Every function is a derivative of some other function. Okay, so let's write R equals S prime. It's the same S that's going to be over there. That's going to be in the minimum of Q of S. So if I write R equals S prime, so let's, for instance, look at this term. We have phi dash S double prime plus phi double dash S prime. This is the derivative of phi prime S prime. Okay? So this is a complete derivative. This is the third derivative of S. Everything is a complete derivative, and I can just integrate the equation. Okay? And I integrate it, and I get that minus. So R double prime was S 3 prime, so I get S double prime. This was this product thing that I just explained. And this equation just integrates. And now we want to multiply by F again. If I multiply by F the equation over here, then the first term is just minus F S prime prime. Okay, so I'm returning to an equation of the same form as I started out with, but it's a little different. And now I want to recall the fact that we calculated here, it's over here, what T is. So for our specific situation, the minimal value is R was S prime, so it's minus J F S prime. So our goal is to estimate this guy. And again, we repeat the tricks. I don't think there is a point. These are exactly the same things, and they're all easy. They're just integration by parts, but we get this equation 3 prime, and we once multiply it by S and integrate, and then we multiply by X, the function f of X equals X, and integrate. And it's the exact same manipulation gives the following, that the integral of fs prime, okay, which was up to this minus j thing, was what we're looking for, just equals q of s. Okay, so what did we show? We took the r that minimizes the functional t, and we constructed the function s, which gives exactly the which is more than the infimum of this functional q. But you can go the other way around, because, and it's not a big surprise, the equation 3 stars is exactly the Euler-Lagrange equation of the minimization of this functional q. Okay? So you can go back. The way you prove the other inequality is you take the S, which minimizes 3 star, and instead of integrating, you do differentiating, and you will arrive at the other equation. Here, integrated equations and differentiating is even easier. Okay, so I can just repeat the argument, and I get the identity, which was the proposition which everything hinged upon it, which was this one. So the infimum of t is minus j, the infimum of q. So this is the kind of game that we play here. And this is how the Poincaré inequality came in. Okay. So this proves the entropy jump result. And I stated also a version for n random variables. This is more complicated, more calculations, but I just want to say what is the, just not all, but some of the modifications that you need in the argument. So now we have n IID copies of our random variable X, and our goal was to, and we have some direction A, and our goal, okay, again, we can, we it's enough to prove the inequality I stated before for entropy for information. This is just this one integrated. And alpha of A, I erased it, I'll never find it. I mean, it's twice sum AI to the fourth minus AI squared. Okay, so this is our goal. Okay, so I want to explain why such terms come in at all.
You're doing it just to get the right constant. Otherwise, you don't need it, right? Because you can do it for 2 hours and use
the... You will not get 1 over n. You will get the constant you got, n to some power. If you iterate this, you get your constant c to some, however times you iterated it, and you get a power less than 1. To get 1 over n, you need to repeat the argument. Okay? Okay, so now I'm using the variational inequality in the form that Chiri described today. So what? So we're taking a vector field p from Rn to Rn, which the inner product with our direction A is 1 pointwise, and then we have this is just the same inequality. I'm copying it. The information of the sum Ai Xi is less than the thing that replaces the derivative is the trace of a square of a derivative of a square of a matrix, and now you take the Hessian of minus log W. W is the natural product density. These are ID random variables, and you multiply it, and you act on P twice. So and now again, remember the thing that somehow simplified everything was that we made a huge simplification. We chose a function in the first argument to just depend on the first coordinate, and here we do something similar, but we modify it to suit to our situation. So we can take here any function p we want, and we're going to take p's such that the ith coordinate is is of this form when r is just a given fixed function, doesn't depend on I, from the reline to the reline. So we're going to restrict to functions of this form. Okay, so this is the educated guess that you're doing in this thing, and then you repeat the argument. You can check that this vector field really satisfies the condition that we wanted, and this normalization is exactly, this probably explains why we have this 1 over AI squared in the denominator, because we want this condition, so we had to normalize somehow. So you check that this condition is satisfied, and then you again, the argument is again, you plug this in, you get some quadratic minimization problem. You prove that its minimum equals minus the minimum of some other problem, and the other problem is connected to the Poincaré inequality in the same way. So, but this is just essentially the same ideas. There is more work to do here. Okay, but I think I did enough calculations anyway. So that's it.
Any questions? Okay, so let's thank Asaf and all the speakers.